Welcome to this episode of the Think Wildlife podcast. Today I speak to Erica D'Souza, who is the program manager of the Oceans and Coasts Initiative of the Nature Conservation Foundation. As a marine biologist, Erica has worked extensively on exploring plant and animal interactions in seagrass ecosystems. On this episode, we talk about the conservation of dugongs, also known as a seagull, in the coastline of India, especially in the Andaman and Nicobar Islands. We also talk about the importance of seagrass and seagrass meadows in tackling the climate and biodiversity crisis. We also talk about the Oceans and Coasts Initiative of the Nature Conservation Foundation. Tune in to listen more, and if you do like the episode, do not forget to subscribe and share. Welcome, Erica, to the podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on here to talk about the great work you're doing with dugongs.
Thank you so much.
So what got you interested in studying marine biology?
I think I was always interested in marine biology right from school. And then over the years, I just pursued my education in that direction. And then I also pursued my research interest in the same. So that's how I got into this field.
A lot of your work has revolved around dugongs. So what exactly are dugongs and where are they found?
So dugongs are marine mammals. They're really large marine mammals that can grow up to six and a half, almost 7 feet in some cases. And they are herbivores, which means they are vegetarian and they feed on seagrasses. And they're closely related to elephants as well in the sea. And if you were to describe how they look, I think their body is more like a dolphin, but their face is more like that of a pig. But they're called sea cows. And I think lots of us as kids would have heard stories about mermaids. And those stories have actually originated from dugongs. So in a nutshell, that's what dugongs are.
And where exactly are they found?
So in India, dugongs are found along the west coast, along the coast, in the west, they're found along the Gujarat coast, that's in the Gulf of Kutch region. Along the east coast, they're found along the Tamil Nadu coast, so it's in the Gulf of Mannar and Park Bay area. And they're also found in the Andaman and Nicobar Islands.
So why are dugongs so critical for marine ecosystems?
So dugongs are thought to be these gardeners of the sea or of the seagrass ecosystems that they live in. So through their feeding, what they say is that researchers have found is that dugongs garden these seagrass meadows, maintaining them with a particular species of seagrass. And with also also maintain the quality of seagrasses. So through their gardening effect, by continuously cropping the seagrasses, they're actually promoting this fresh and more nutritious seagrass to grow. And also by maintaining these seagrass meadows with a particular kind of seagrass species, which is generally maintaining the health of the seagrass meadows, they're also helping the other organisms that are dependent on these, like lots of the juvenile fish, that may feed on seagrasses, and lots of other larger animals, like say turtles, also that feed on seagrass species.
What exactly is the conservation status of dugongs in India?
So in India, dugongs are given the highest level of protection, just like how tigers are. So they are protected under the Indian Wildlife Protection Act, Wildlife Act, and under Schedule 1 of the Indian Wildlife Protection Act, which means they're given the highest level of protection. In the world, they are protected, they are classified as being vulnerable under the IUCN Red List. So that's the kind of status they're given worldwide as well as in India.
So what are the main threats they face to it, not only in India, but around the world?
So across the areas where dugongs are found, across the distribution of dugongs, dugongs are actually threatened by entanglement in nets, because they need to surface to breed every few minutes. So once they get entangled in fishing nets, they're unable to surface, and hence it results in the death of the dugongs. Propeller strikes, so they're unable to detect fast-moving boats, and hence they're unable to dive deeper and try and avoid these boats. So lots of times the high-speed propellers tend to harm or tend to cause injuries to dugongs. There's also loss of habitat. and hence availability of food is affected, and then dugongs tend to move to other areas. So these are some of the threats that are faced by dugongs. And in some areas, dugongs are also hunted for their meat.
So talk a bit about your work on dugongs.
So most of our work in Andaman over the years has been focused on trying to understand the interactions between dugongs and seagrasses. So in Andaman, we have a small population of dugongs, and they're mostly like an isolated population. Small herds, maybe few individuals in herds. So these small pockets of isolated individuals or small groups scattered across the Andaman archipelago. And I tried to study how these small isolated groups or individuals are actually interacting with their habitats or with the seagrass meadows. So what we found is that these animals, because their pressures on the habitats that they're living in, namely the seagrass meadows, are so low that they actually don't need to move too much between seagrass meadows in search of food. And they continuously use same seagrass meadows or clusters of seagrass meadows over years. So while this may seem to be good for the dugongs in terms of the energy that it utilizes in looking for food, it also poses a threat to dugongs because they are faced with very site-specific threats specific to the areas that they're continuously feeding in. So unlike in other areas where dugongs are found across the world where they occur in larger herds, dugongs tend to feed or graze in one particular area and wipe out the seagrass in that area and then move to other areas and allow areas to recover. Whereas dugongs in the Andamans, because they're so few in numbers, they can actually continuously be present in the same area and not actually deplete the resources there. So this was some of the work that I was doing in the past few years. And more recently, we're trying to look at how these dugongs are affected by the threat in these feeding grounds. So how their behaviors are altered due to the threat and their threat and the threats or the disturbance mainly being in the form of boat noise. So we're looking at how boat noise affects the feeding behavior, affects the presence of dugongs in these areas.
So, at a national level, what is being done to conserve dugongs?
So over the last few years, there has been a dugong task force that was set up in the late 2000s, where the agenda was to try and conserve dugongs in all the regions where it occurs. Then India also was a signatory or had an MOU with the Convention for Migratory Species, once again to protect dugongs, promote research, and try and understand the dugongs and the kind of threats that it's facing. And more recently, there has been a conservation reserve that has been set up in Tamil Nadu that specifically is focused on dugong conservation.
So you are currently studying seagrass ecosystems. What value do the ecosystems have in tackling the biodiversity and climate crisis?
Seagrasses are one of those ecosystems that people don't actually know about because they're like except for the seagrass meadows in the intertidal areas, but the ones who are that are submerged always underwater, people don't actually see them, and hence they don't know much about these ecosystems. And often people feel that the water or the sand is actually barren and don't consider the small blades of seagrasses in these systems. So because of its inconspicuous nature most of the time, that's where seagrasses are often not considered in when developmental plans are made and lots of coastal development activities are also being carried out. So one of the as in the important role that these seagrass ecosystems play is as a source of food for a lot of marine organisms like the turtles, the dugongs, some of the fish. They act as nursery habitats for lots of juvenile fish, sometimes commercially important fish, or also important species like some of the sharks and rays. All the juveniles of these species actually use seagrass meadows. And also seagrasses play an important role in trapping carbon in the marine systems. So seagrasses, along with mangroves and the salt marsh vegetation, actually trap a lot of carbon in these systems and store it in their sediment. And we all know that excess carbon dioxide in the atmosphere eventually ends up in the sea, and that ends up in causing this acidification of the waters, which eventually affects lots of the other organisms living in these systems. So seagrasses are act as this important ecosystem that actually traps all this carbon in the systems and holds it in its soil, in the soil or in the sediment that it holds onto.
So talk a bit about your current research on seagrass meadows.
So with respect to seagrass meadows, our research is focused a lot on seagrasses in the Andamans. And here we are looking at the values or the importance of seagrass ecosystems in terms of their sociological values. So how do communities value them? How important they are to the communities inhabiting the coast? Their ecological values in terms of how important they are as a source of food, as nursery habitats, so just as a habitat for a lot of important species, marine species. We're also trying to look at how seagrasses affect the stability of coastlines, or how they act as a carbon trap, how they trap organic carbon in these marine systems. And we're also looking at, like continuing from the previous studies, we're looking at how large herbivores like the dugongs in the Andamans and in the Lakshadweep as well, how green sea turtles are actually interacting with seagrass ecosystems in two island archipelagos. So that's the work that we are doing with respect to seagrass ecosystems in both the Andaman and Nicobar and the Lakshadweep archipelago.
So how are seagrass meadows faring in India, and what is being done to conserve them?
So like I said, that seagrasses are one of these systems that not people don't know much about. So obviously all the coastal development that is happening does not even consider is not even aware of the presence of these important systems in the vicinity of these development activities. So as a result, lots of these seagrass meadows are being affected, either in terms of completely being wiped away due to sediment runoff, or excess of nutrients in the system, or just coastal dredging that actually is being carried out without considering some of the presence of some of these ecosystems. So that's the kind of impacts that lots of the coastal development activities are actually having on seagrasses. And across the coast, we are having these kind of development that's happening. And I guess there are a lot more studies coming up showing the impacts of these activities on seagrasses. But there's still a lot of unknown there.
Can you talk a bit more about Nature Conservation Foundation's marine program beyond dugongs and seagrass?
So our program focuses on understanding the impacts of climate change on coral reefs in the Lakshadweep Islands. It also focuses on fisheries, the changing fisheries, and how that's impacting fish, the fish, fish in the ocean, and also focuses on the seagrass ecosystems. And like I spoke about, the interactions of large herbivores with these systems, as well as the impact of climate change on these ecosystems. So, while our focus or the principle that we work on is to try and use our research to inform conservation. So we focus a lot on understanding these systems and how they're faring or how they're functioning, and use that information to then help to then inform conservation managers or practitioners about the kind of steps that they can potentially take to try and protect these systems. And at the same time, what we try and do is to try and make the local communities aware of these marine systems, the importance of these systems, and also share with them our research findings or what's actually happening to these marine systems, so they are aware of the importance of these systems and the status of these systems, because they are the ones actually dependent on these systems as well. So that's the focus of our marine program in at Nature Conservation Foundation.
So how can individuals contribute to not only NCF's marine program, but marine conservation as a whole?
I think there are several things individuals can do, but I keep thinking whether that will actually make a difference at an individual level, because I think what one needs to tackle is at a global level or at a larger level or the industrial level, the kind of damage that is being done to these marine systems. So while at an individual level we can avoid using plastic, making sure our garbage is not ending up in the sea, but I think we need to tackle the larger issues that are actually affecting these marine systems, and I think that's where the difference is actually going to take place.
So, what have been some of the greatest challenges you have faced in your conservation career?
I think one of the greatest challenges is trying to convince people about the importance of these systems and the urgency to try and protect them. And I think that's something that needs to be done almost like annually or every time you need to try and convince people about this. So it's like an ongoing thing that one needs to do in order to get something done or get any conservation action in place.
So, what have been some of your greatest conservation learnings?
That you cannot give up, you just need to keep going till something gets done.
So, that is the final question I had for this podcast. Thank you so much for your time. It is a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you so much, Anish.